about the last hours of Jennifer Corbin's life.
We know through phone records and witness accounts that she was on the phone until about 12:30 a.m. There was obviously some tough times going on in the marriage and tough times here at the Corbin home. And I'm thinking there's definitely more to it at this point. She told me that she had heard about Mrs. Corbin's possible suicide.
I just happened to answer the phone when the Gwinnett Police Department called asking about Dolly's case. He saw Dolly on a couch as soon as he walked in the front door, and she was leaned over, and she had a gunshot wound to the right side of her head. Anybody would walk into that scene and initially think, this is a suicide.
The thought that it could have been suicide was just ludicrous in my mind.
I remember how happy she was, how beautiful she looked, and she was so excited to see friends and teachers. She loved being with the family. We were confident that Dolly had been murdered.
On minute one, the family never believed that Jennifer killed herself.
Jennifer would never have committed suicide.
As the investigation continued, the more we learned, the odder it became. There was a lot going on in her life that no one knew about.
The boys found her first. That was heartbreaking.
But I can't even walk.
I know she's dead.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
She's been shot. I was sitting with the boys waiting for the family to come, and Dylan was very distraught and said to me at the time, well, when the ambulance gets here, they'll make my mommy all better, right? And I had to tell him, no, that your mom is in your heart now.
Hi, this is True Crime Brewery, and I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick. How's everyone doing?
Welcome back to the quiet end of the bar. And today we're doing Death by Dentist, The Murders of Dolly Hearn and Jen Corbin. So the 33-year-old mother of two, Jennifer Corbin, and her husband Bart Corbin, a successful dentist, lived in Bogan Gates Subdivision in Buford, Georgia, in 2004, when a knock on their neighbor's door changed lives forever. It was 7:30 a.m. on a Saturday, December 4th, 2004, when Steve and Kelly Cuomo, who lived across the street from the Corbins, were surprised by a knock at their front door. Steve answered the door to see Dalton Corbin, age 7, on his front porch. His face was pink and streaked with tears, and he was still in his pajamas. "My mom isn't breathing," Dalton said. "My daddy shot my mommy. I need you to call 911. Steve Cuomo was skeptical. He didn't think that that really happened, but something had happened, obviously, so he called 911 as Kelly went to the Corbin house with Dalton. Kelly would see that Jennifer Corbin was, in fact, shot dead. She lay in her bed with a gunshot wound to her head. Bart Corbin wasn't home. Dalton had discovered his mom's body when he went to ask about breakfast. The death of Jennifer Corbin opened the door to a hidden life of family dysfunction, and the shocking past of Bart Corbin. So before we begin this really fascinating discussion, let's thank some 5-star reviewers. Does that sound like a good idea?
I think that's good.
Okay. So thank you to Jeremy Podcast Listener, GogFog101SC, KillerDoc33, Photog Mama Main, Simon Sturkey, Courtney Gross, C2.E, Hinmo, Ari Cyan, and of course, Curtil.
Thanks for the 5-star reviews, guys. We appreciate them.
Yes. What are we drinking today?
Today we're drinking kind of a strange beer. Well, not strange. Okay.
Strange in what way? Let's start at the beginning.
Let's start at the beginning here. So it's called the Walking Dead Blood Orange IPA.
Woohoo!
So obviously, the beer company, the brewer, is using the Walking Dead TV series.
Yes,
in some sort of collaboration.
Sure. Did it have pictures from the show or the comic on the label? What's the label look like?
Let me see. It had a walker on the label.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool.
So it's brewed by Terrapin Beer Company in Athens, Georgia. And as I said, it's an American IPA. So these guys tend to be pale gold to red amber color. They are generally fairly hoppy, with citric hops or herbal hops. They tend to be fairly high in bitterness, and there's usually a pretty good malt presence. Now, this particular one isn't really an IPA, even though they say it's an IPA.
Is that legal?
Sure. You can name it whatever you want.
Okay.
So it's more of an amber color. It has a medium-sized tan head with a little bit of lace. So far, so good. Pretty sweet malt aroma, but really no hop aroma. No citrus, maybe a hint. That's pretty much it.
Well, where's the blood orange come from?
Well, it's supposed to be there.
Okay. It's lacking something it should have.
It just ain't there.
Okay.
And the taste is pretty much all caramel, with maybe a hint of orange, and I think that's only because it's the name of the beer, so I'm willing orange to be in there. I'm not really sure. And it's a medium-bodied beer. So like I said, this probably is not an IPA, probably more of just an amber beer, but it's not bad. It'll quench your thirst. It just didn't live up to the advertising.
So it's not your top 10, or even your top 50?
Or even my top 100.
Wow, you know a lot of beers.
Well, I've had a few in my time.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I mostly picked this because I know you're such a big Walking Dead fan.
A little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit. Well, when we went to Atlanta, we did do the Walking Dead tours.
Oh, let me tell you some stories about you.
Yeah, I know all about me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was fun.
The Walking Dead tour was fun.
Very fun.
Yeah.
So we had fun in Atlanta, in the outskirts.
We did.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's the beer.
All right. Well, grab your beer. And what are we drinking this beer out of?
Well, this is probably just a pint glass.
Okay. So I can get my Daryl. I have a Daryl mug. Can I use that?
You can use that.
Okay.
That would work well.
Okay. Let's open it up.
Okay. I got the beers. You got the glasses. Let's head on down.
Okay. Pretty quiet here, considering.
Considering. Yeah. I see there's some people kind of shuffling in. They're getting ready for more basketball because it is March Madness.
Sure, but that takes place at the noisy end. We're at the quiet end.
Yeah, we'll fend them off if they try to break down the doors and get into our spot.
Absolutely, we will.
All right, let's do this case.
Okay, so Jen Corbin, she started life as Jenny Barber, and she was the second daughter of three in a middle-class American family. Max and Narda, Jen's parents, both came from traditional homes. Max was born in Logan, West Virginia, and Narda was the daughter of an Army colonel. Their home base was in New Hampshire, but they traveled a lot for the service. So both of Narda's parents would eventually get jobs at the Pentagon and retire early. In 1964, Max and Narda met at a dance in Bradenton, Florida. They married within a year of meeting, and then Jen was born in 1971. The Barbers settled in Gwinnett County, Georgia. Jen went to college in Savannah, studying art and design, and she dated casually in college, had lots of friends, and worked as a waitress. Now Bart, he finished dental school in 1991, and he filled in for an older dentist who was recovering from a hand injury for a while.
Yeah, just getting his career started.
Yeah.
So you kind of take whatever job's available.
I would think so.
Yeah.
He wanted his own practice eventually, of course, but he had to work for some more established dentists and save up to open a practice.
Oh, yes.
Now, Bart was handsome, dressed well, and he seemed confident. After school, he had a long-term affair with a married woman, but he didn't have any public relationships that his family and friends were aware of. He was a frequent customer at a restaurant where Jen was working, and Bart's brother Bobby worked at the same restaurant, so he introduced Bart to Jen in 1995. Now, Jen was drawn to Bart's wittiness, his good looks, and when she introduced him to her parents, they were impressed by him. They seemed to be a good match, and Bart seemed very caring toward Jen. He would make a good husband for Jen, they thought. He had a lot of the same interests as Jen's dad, so they got along, and sometimes they went fishing together, even.
So they seemed to be starting a pretty good relationship.
Yeah, the family was pleased.
And her parents really liked him.
Yes.
So Bart took Jen on a business trip to Italy. Wow. Those dentists travel in first class, don't they?
I guess so. You've never taken me to Italy on a business trip.
No. So they'd just been dating for a while, I think a few months, and off they go to Italy. When they returned from Italy, Jen confided to her mother that she was pregnant.
Well, romance, Italy, I could see that happening.
Yeah. She and Bart had decided to get married and have the baby. Jen had considered all of her options, and she wanted to have a big wedding and a family. So she wasn't going to abort the baby. She wasn't going to give the baby up for adoption. She was going to get married, live happily ever after with Bart.
Yeah, she was pretty happy about it. She was in love with him.
Yeah, at one time. With her mother's help, they were able to have a wedding in just 6 weeks. On September 1st, 1996, Jen and Bart were married. They seemed very happy. They didn't go on a honeymoon, but they spent the weekend on Max and Narda's houseboat. These are fairly big deals.
Houseboats?
Houseboats. And they had, the houseboat was on Lake Lanier in Georgia. It's a pretty big lake. And a lot of socializing around houseboats.
Yeah, eventually Jen and Bart would get a used houseboat and join in. It was a thing to do on the weekends, I guess.
Yeah, it was.
Don't they have alligators down there in the lakes?
Yeah, I don't know if they're in Lake Lanier.
Okay, because I'd be hesitant to swim in that area.
Well, just look out for alligators.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. I think by the time you see them, it might be too late, though.
It probably is. Bart came from a family of three sons, three boys. Bart and his twin brother, Brad, were born in 1963. Bart was the more outgoing of the twins, and he was also very close to his younger brother, Bobby, who was born 4 years after the twins. So we've got Bart, Brad, and Bob.
Yeah, the three Bs.
The three Bs.
So Bart's father had once been a military policeman, and his mother worked in a retail store. Bart's parents divorced later, and Bart's dad remarried a much younger woman. The three boys were encouraged to participate in sports when they were young, and Bart was a football player in high school and also at the University of Georgia in Athens.
He played football?
Yep.
Wow. Did he have a scholarship, or he was a walk-on or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, he got some financial aid because of it. I don't know if it was a full scholarship.
Wow.
Because his father made a fair amount of money, but he did end up getting more financial aid than people had expected at the time.
Well, and Georgia's a big-time football power.
Yeah, I don't think he was like a huge player on the team, but...
Yeah, but he's still on the team.
Yeah, he was.
That's pretty impressive.
It is.
To a sports junkie, it is anyway.
Yeah. Doesn't mean much to me, but I can see where you're coming from.
Okay.
But Bart already knew that he wanted to be a dentist. Now, he roomed with his brother Brad, who was also in the pre-med program. He wanted to be a neurologist, and I don't know if he ever did that or not. But Bart had never dated, and he went to college a virgin, as far as anyone knew. Now, in his sophomore year, he was approached by a pretty brunette, and this would be his first girlfriend. She would later say that Bart was a gentleman, but he was super frugal, and that annoyed her.
Super frugal is...
Cheap.
Speech for cheap.
Right.
Right?
When she asked Bart why he wanted to be a dentist, he said that it was for the money, so that she didn't really like that idea. He didn't have any altruistic reasons for wanting to be a dentist. And money, she learned, would always come first with Bart. Even if he loved her, it would always be money first, and she didn't think she could live with that. He wanted to marry and settle down. So this girlfriend, she broke up with Bart because she thought they just had really different goals, and she didn't think she'd be happy in the long run living with him and having a family.
That's probably a good thing.
You may have dodged a bullet.
Right.
Quite literally. Now, she never felt afraid of Bart, though, and he seemed to accept her breakup without any negative feelings. And when Bart started dental school in 1987 in Augusta, Georgia, he was perceived as a bit of an oddball. He was outgoing and he liked to go to parties and stuff, but he had an edge to him. Those who knew him well knew that he had a really short fuse and could lash out unpredictably. He was still very focused on money, and he told his brother that he hoped to marry another dentist and have a practice together. So he's got some pretty good goals there.
Well, yeah. I mean, he wants to make money, and if he marries another professional, that's even more money.
Right.
So.
And that was his original idea.
Yeah.
So, double your money, right?
Right.
So Bart met Dolly Hearn in dental school. She was a dental student, and she was a petite, pretty brunette who'd been a cheerleader and an athlete in high school. Now, if you see pictures of Dolly, she was more than pretty. She was gorgeous, just a beautiful woman.
She was very good looking.
Kind of Liz Taylor-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dolly's father was a dentist, so that was in her family. She'd helped out in his office, and she admired his work, so she was in the class a year behind Bart in dental school. Now, she liked Bart a lot right from the start. He had a really good sense of humor. Everyone said that about him, really witty and funny to be around.
Yeah, but he also had a temper. We've mentioned that, too.
Yes.
So.
But she really admired his quick wit, because she was a smart woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Probably smarter than him, a better student than he was.
Yeah, I get that impression.
Yes.
So Bart thought that he and Dolly were a perfect couple, because according to his plan, he'll be a dentist, his wife will be a dentist, and they'll make lots of money. So there's the perfect couple. But Dolly wasn't that interested in a committed relationship, not as much as Bart anyway. She put her studies before her relationship, which could be a problem at times. By 1989, Dolly was backing off the relationship, and Bart became very controlling. Dolly started to feel trapped. They broke up many times, then get back together after he had promised to give her more space. Familiar pattern, huh?
Yeah, the on again, off again. A volatile relationship.
Yeah. Eventually, Dolly broke up with Bart for good. He was seething and followed her, Dolly, upset to see her with any other man. In the fall of 1989, Dolly was feeling relieved to be out of the relationship, but Bart wasn't over her. He often called friends to talk about how much he missed her. And apparently he began stalking her.
Very much so.
In November of 1989, Dolly's cat disappeared. Then a month later, her dentures for a project were stolen.
Now, this was a project that had taken her months as part of one of her final projects for the year.
Yeah.
And it just went missing, which didn't set her back financially, but a lot of time.
Yeah.
Which she was busy anyway, so this was a real problem for her.
It was. Someone also contaminated her contact lens solution, mixing it with hairspray.
So yeah, she came into a class, her eyes were burning in red.
That must have been harsh, yeah.
Well, that's alarming.
Yeah.
Because he was actually causing harm to her at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, he's the suspect, or she thinks he's doing this.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, but because he still had a key to her place.
Well.
The cat's missing.
Changed the lock.
He knows that she loves the cat.
Yeah.
And now this contact lens. And there were other little things that I haven't mentioned in here.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of things that were pointing to the fact that Bart was trying to sabotage her in many ways.
Right.
And Dolly had really high aspirations. She wanted to be an oral surgeon, which takes more than just being a general dentist. You have to have really top grades.
Right.
Yeah.
And more training.
Yes. So Dolly went to her landlord, and she did have her locks changed after the contact lens incident. But then her car tires were slashed, and her taillights were broken. So it was continuing. And then in early 1990, Dolly filed a complaint against Bart. He'd stolen some dental instruments, as well as the dentures that she'd almost finished. But Bart couldn't be linked to the things that happened with any kind of evidence. So when Dolly went home for a visit, she discovered that there was paint in her gas tank. And so her car breaks down. They check the gas. It's pink. It's got red paint in it. And they know it's him because he's just been doing a lot to her.
Yeah, but nothing that can be proven.
Right. So she goes home and her father sees this and he's just really upset. So he decides to drive to Augusta and confront Bart. And he does that. But he said Bart just gave him a blank stare and denied it and didn't really seem too worried about it. He's got this angry father coming to yell at him and say, leave my daughter alone. Didn't seem to faze him, at least outwardly.
Right.
I'm sure it fazed him in some way that we don't know, but he didn't show any reaction.
No apparent reaction.
Right. So she's afraid, and she borrows a handgun from a student in her dental class. So things are ratcheting up in a bad way here. Then she bought her own revolver with the help of her dad, and her dad took her to a shooting range and helped her learn gun safety and how to shoot it so that she could keep the gun in her apartment. Now, before Bart was to graduate from dental school, Dolly agreed to just be friends. He'd stopped stalking and harassing her. It's been a few months, so she thought it would be good to just separate on good terms. which is a mistake a lot of women seem to make, is forgiving too much.
Yes.
Now, in early June 1990, Dolly was planning a visit with her family, and at 5:24 p.m. on June 6th, she was found dead of a gunshot wound. She was on the couch in the living room of her apartment. Now, her roommate, Angela, had found Dolly when she got home that afternoon. She'd been dead for several hours, and there was a gun sitting in her lap, so it appeared to be a suicide. There were no signs of forced entry or any other signs of a struggle. Now, Dolly's family and friends didn't believe that Dolly was suicidal, though, and she's getting near the end of dental school. She seems like a happy person.
Right. She's
There's no history of depression.
Lots to look forward to.
So it doesn't seem like it's something she would do. But Bart had convinced his friends that Dolly was paranoid and unstable, so he'd been setting her up for months to look like she was an unstable person. So it seems like he was planning this. Now, on June 7th, the cause of Dolly's death was written by the medical examiner. Gunshot wound to the head with secondary exsanguination, apparently self-inflicted. So exsanguination is bleeding to death.
You lose all your blood.
Yep. Okay. So it was also undetermined, though. So we know what caused the death, but we don't know homicide, suicide, accidental. That's undetermined, right?
At the time.
Yes. So Bart was interrogated on June 7th at the police station, and Bart admitted that Dolly was his ex-girlfriend. He said that he'd seen her on June 5th and that they hadn't made plans to see each other again. He said he'd been in class until noon that day, had lunch, and returned to school a little after 1 p.m. Then he said he went home at 2 p.m., showered, called Dolly to tell her he couldn't go to a party with her that night, left a message because she didn't answer, and then returned to the school a little after 2:30. So he seems to have alibis for that afternoon.
He does. And eventually Dolly's death was declared a suicide.
Yes, although her family never accepted that.
Family never accepted that.
Right.
But law enforcement said it was a suicide.
Yes.
Now, Jen, the lady he married, he never told her about Dolly.
No, not a thing.
Not one little bit.
No. To Jen, his past was, there were a lot of secrets in his past. He was kind of a mystery to her.
Yeah.
Very tight-lipped.
Just a little bit of a red flag. So after graduation from dental school, Bart worked at various dental clinics. Again, he's trying to make some money so he can start his own practice, start raking in the big bucks. Dara Prentice worked in the office. She is a married mother of two children. She began an affair with Bart, and this affair continued into his marriage with Jen.
Yes, really up until Jen died.
So even after the marriage to Jen.
Oh, yes.
It
yes.
continued.
Well into the marriage, yes.
Not just up to, but
no, it didn't
into.
End. No.
I got it. Now, as we've alluded to or said before, Bart was known for his temper, and this continued. He used to rage at employees for minor infractions. And when he did finally open his own practice, Dara did the billing for him, and she felt that she was special to Bart and that they were in love. So maybe she's thinking, okay, I'm going to leave my husband, marry this guy.
Well, they talked about it eventually when her children were older, I guess they were waiting for.
That means it's never going to happen.
Possibly, yep.
So when Bart met Jen, Dara accepted that she had no right to be jealous. She wasn't free, and she couldn't ask him not to see single women. When Jen got pregnant, Bart discussed with Dara whether Jen should get an abortion and if he should marry her. He told Dara that he was angry at Jen for getting pregnant, and he wanted her to get an abortion.
Yeah, so he's talking about Jen behind her back with Dara.
With Dara, his lover.
Yes.
Dara told
and Jen has no idea.
Right.
Yeah.
Not a clue. Dara told Bart he should marry Jen because he loved her, and it was the honorable thing to do. Well, okay. I mean, marry because you're loving her, not because it's the honorable thing.
I suppose. I don't know. I mean, if he did love her, I guess you're right. That's a reason.
Right. It's the honorable thing to do is not a reason.
Probably not.
But again, this is, what, 25 years ago?
It's in the 90s, yeah.
Yeah. So.
So Dara really liked Jen, though, and she thought it was a good idea for him to marry her.
Yeah.
She even socialized with them. Sometimes she felt guilty, but she rationalized it by thinking that her affair with Bart wasn't really affecting Jen and Bart's marriage. Bart had an affair with another woman, too, which Dara wasn't aware of. Now, her name was Harriet Gray, and she was employed at a dental office where Bart worked part-time to supplement his income. Now, she was 20 years older than Bart. He's about 30, she's about 50, but an attractive woman. So she was recently divorced, she'd lost weight, but a week after Labor Day, 1996, Harriet disappeared. Now, that was the weekend after Jen and Bart got married, that she disappeared.
Ooh, I love conspiracy theories. So, he got rid of her?
I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know. It's just funny, though, that there could be a link there.
And she's never been heard of again?
Well, she was found. We'll talk about that
okay.
soon.
So she disappears.
She disappears a week after he gets married.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, Jen was a little over 2 months pregnant on their wedding day, but she didn't think of it as a shotgun wedding at all, according to her mom. She was really happy about the wedding, and she felt that Bart was really the love of her life. And Jen's family loved Bart as a member of their family. But Bart's practice didn't really take off as quickly as he'd hoped, and he went through employees quickly, most of them quitting after one or two of his verbal attacks. And Dara was the only one who stuck with him for any long period of time as an employee.
So he wasn't as successful as he wanted to be.
Right.
In his own practice.
Sure, he wasn't. He didn't really have a way with people.
No.
Now, Jen had had a dog when she and Bart got together, and he was this big, friendly, yellow lab named Sebastian. But Sebastian hated Bart, which was really strange for a dog who loved everyone else. So I guess Bart didn't have a way with animals either.
No, or maybe this Sebastian the dog was just pretty sharp. And could recognize what a shithead Bart was.
I think dogs can sense things like that.
Or maybe Bart did things to him.
When Jen wasn't looking. Sure, that wouldn't surprise me. Now, Jen finally had to give Sebastian to her parents, though. She was afraid that if the dog was to bite Bart, Bart would kill him. So her parents finally agreed to take the dog. To save the dog, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty scary to live with someone you're afraid is going to kill your dog.
Isn't it?
It's terrible. Now, it didn't take long after the wedding before Bart became extremely controlling of Jen. He complained about her nail polish until she finally gave up and just stopped polishing her nails altogether. Now, at first, Bart had seemed very loving and attentive to Jen, especially in front of her parents. And her parents thought he was really funny and fun to be around. Now, Jen and Bart's first son, Dalton, was born in March of 1997, and Jen became a stay-at-home mom, and she seemed okay with that. But things changed with Bart. He wanted the house to be spotless, but he expected her to get everything done while he was at work so when he got home, he could be the center of attention. And if she was cleaning the kitchen or something when he was home, he would write in his journal about it, how she had neglected him. So he has issues.
So a bit of a narcissist.
Just a wee bit, I think.
Yeah. So in addition, Bart began to belittle Jen, saying he was the boss because he was a doctor. Well, I do that with you all the time.
Well, of course. That's just understood.
Yeah. And she was just a bimbo. Overall, Bart believed that men were more important than women. Maybe he learned this from his father.
His father seemed to be that way, from what I read about his family upbringing. His father was very domineering.
Yep.
Wasn't super nice to Bart's mother, and left the mother for a younger woman at some point, and then didn't really have much of a relationship with any of the family after that.
He didn't. When Bart behaved badly in front of other people, Jen would make excuses for him. You know, that's just Bart. Or he really doesn't mean it.
Of course.
Yeah. You gotta do that. Jen didn't know that Dolly ever existed.
The
dental school girl. But Bart had mentioned to Dara, his lover, that a girl he'd known back in college had killed herself. He didn't mention that he'd had a relationship with her or that he'd been questioned about her death. It was just kind of like, oh yeah, I know a girl who died.
Right, like just an acquaintance.
So in the spring of 1998, Jen found out she was pregnant again. She told her sister Heather before she told Bart. Heather would remember that Jen had been terrified to tell Bart, which seemed strange. You know, they were a married couple.
Yeah, why should you be? I mean, I would think this is something they discussed about a family and planning, and why would he be upset?
Right. So the way she broke the news to Bart, she brought a, a baby item, wrapped it up, and gave it to Bart.
Trying to break it to him gently.
Break it to me gently.
Yeah, but as you know, Bart was really angry about the pregnancy, just as Jen had feared he would be. And he actually threw the box and yelled at Jen, "How could you do this to me?" So that's very childish. Very, just a strange outburst.
Yes, isn't it?
As if he had no part in it. Which it always kills me when men do that.
Yeah, how could you be pregnant?
Right.
Aren't you supposed to be on the pill or something?
Right. Well, Dylan was born in January 1999, and Bart seemed pleased. But then he elected to have a vasectomy afterwards. So, on his own, no discussion.
That's it. Two kids.
Now, when the boys were toddlers, it didn't seem like he showed much interest in them. But as they got older, he got them into sports because that interested him. The thing with the sports was, though, he was very demanding, and he expected a lot from them as little boys. And Jen was embarrassed to be with Bart at the games eventually because of the way he would yell at them relentlessly and cause a scene. So she started sitting in a different end of the bleachers just to be away from him. And it made the boys nervous. The boys were jumpy, and it was hard on them.
Well, yeah.
They have this perfectionist hollering at them.
Any psychologist or pediatrician could tell you that's not a good situation for the kids.
Of course not. Right? No, they need support. Not pressure.
Not belittlement.
Right. So Jen called Dara, Bart's office wife, though she's starting to get a little suspicious. And Dara continued her affair with Bart, and he was promising her that one day, when both of their children were older, they would get divorces and be together. Now, Jen had never known about Harriet Gray, who disappeared 1 week after their wedding. But then Harriet Gray was found dead 18 months after she disappeared. So a scuba diver had found her car in a lake in Alabama.
In the lake?
Yep, the car was in the lake, and her body was floating inside the car with her hands duct taped to the steering wheel. So it was clearly a murder.
Yeah.
So Harriet Gray was murdered.
Doesn't sound like a suicide, does it?
No, couldn't have been. So if Harriet Gray is murdered, and Bart has, we'll find out later, killed his wife and his former girlfriend, just makes me wonder if Bart killed Harriet Gray. It's certainly something to consider. Although they haven't proven that, and Harriet's murder remains unsolved.
So they don't have any suspect or anything. I'm sure, though, with Dara or Dolly, I'm sure with Dolly and Jen that people are looking at Bart for doing that, too.
I would think right? So. Certainly makes me suspicious.
Yeah.
Now,
although
Bart,
it's not his M.O. He drowned this one. He didn't shoot her.
If he indeed did it, yes.
Okay.
But he doesn't have to do the same thing with everyone, does he?
No.
No. So Bart told Jen next to nothing about his past. And she began to think, well, he must have some secrets. But Bart seemed really determined to chip away at Jen's self-confidence. And she began to accept that she was not in a happy marriage and she probably never would be. Bart shouted at her. He started calling her names. By Christmas 2003, Jen seemed unable to hide her sadness anymore. Bart had some financial trouble in his dental practice. He wasn't getting as many patients as expected. He really lacked empathy and concern and was short with his patients. He also had some lawsuits, some for not paying for equipment and a few for incompetence. A complaint with the Georgia Board of Dentistry was made, and he was forced to reimburse a patient. He had claimed to this patient that he knew how to do this advanced bridge work or something, and then he couldn't do it, and her mouth was bleeding. He couldn't stop the bleeding. And he just kind of freaked out, put his head in his hands, and said, "I don't know what to do." So this woman sued him, and he did have to reimburse her. Now, Bart and Jen continued to socialize, but often they attended events separately. Once, while discussing coverage of the Scott Peterson case, which was around the same time, Bart said, "Well, Scott Peterson only got caught because he didn't keep his mouth shut." And then his friend who was with him at the time said, "Geez, Bart, you know, I don't want to get on your bad side.
Yeah,
Pretty harsh talking about a mom and her unborn baby."
Yeah.
What a thing to say.
It's just dumb.
Yeah.
So Jen Corbin herself, she became involved in an extramarital relationship.
Yes, kind of.
Kind of. This came about after Jen's mom invited her to play a PlayStation game online with her, EverQuest. Now, I'm not a gamer. I never heard of this. Have you ever heard of EverQuest?
Only from what I've read about this case. It's a role-playing game where you team together with people online, and it's like medieval or something. You go out and slay dragons and solve puzzles and kind of a diversion.
So, yeah, it was an escape for Jen.
Yeah.
She had a lot of fun playing it with her mother and other anonymous people. She began to exchange messages, though, with someone named Chris. This is outside of the game.
Yeah, she met him on the game, but then it expanded.
Chris said he was a 33-year-old man. Jen looked forward to his messages because he was a fun person to correspond with.
And she's lonely.
And she's very lonely in a marriage that sounds like shit. And she's got two kids that are young. Tough.
Not in a great place in her life.
No.
No.
Chris lived far away in St. Louis, so the interaction seemed harmless.
I could see that. I mean,
yeah,
someone lives across the country.
Some online flirting.
Yeah.
So Jen never expected to meet him, and she was lonely. Chris offered her attention she wasn't getting at home, and she began to feel that she loved Christopher, and they began to write love letters, talking of a day when they might meet and have a life together.
That's right.
But, and there's always a but. Well, maybe not always, but...
Okay, what's the but?
There's a but. He wouldn't send a picture of him or speak on the phone with Jen.
So this is possibly catfishing.
Right.
If you've ever watched the show Catfish, when they won't video chat or even talk on the phone, well, when they won't talk on the phone, it usually means they're not the sex that they're saying they are.
Right. They're not the person they're claiming to
but
be.
But they're certainly not the person they're claiming to be. Right, right. Usually.
Right. So he... Chris wouldn't do those, so they were communicating by text or emails.
Yes.
By the end of the summer, they were communicating several times a day and proclaiming their love for each other.
This is hard for me to understand when people do this, and she's certainly not the first person to do it.
No, she's not, but you're right.
It boggles my mind.
It really is difficult to understand or get my head wrapped around how you can fall in love with somebody that you just communicate with by messaging.
Yeah, not even a phone.
Right.
Not even hearing the voice.
You have no idea who they are, and you're claiming that you're in love with them.
Yeah. It makes me think that she was just terribly lonely and vulnerable.
Well, we know she was terribly lonely.
Yes.
And she must have been vulnerable.
Well, yeah. Her sister Heather tried to talk some sense into her and said, you know, you don't know who this person is. What are you doing?
Right.
But, you know, when you're lonely and this person's telling you what you need to hear and being kind to you,
yeah,
I can see how it could happen.
You're going to respond to that.
Yeah. Now, that summer, Jen discussed leaving her marriage with her sisters, but Jen only worked part-time in her mom's art studio and as a preschool teacher. She didn't make enough money to support herself and the boys on her own, and she knew that Bart wouldn't be very difficult about giving her anything.
Well, that could be, but that's what the courts are for.
Yes, but he might not be compliant.
Yeah, we know that one.
We know that he's not above doing some bad shit.
Right.
Now, Bart sensed that Jen had fallen out of love with him. She stopped having sex with him, and Bart started telling friends he didn't want to lose Jen. He called Jen's girlfriends and his in-laws, crying and begging them to tell him what to do to save his marriage. So Bart began to lose weight, and he seemed anxious and agitated. So not lose weight in a positive way, but getting kind of skeletal and unhealthy looking.
Not like he was trying to lose weight or get more in shape.
Right, no. Now the thing is, this whole calling her family and friends, that's kind of odd. What do you think of that? Ever done that?
Have I ever done that?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
That's not something I would do.
Okay.
My thinking about that is that he's just trying to set up an alibi kind of thing. That he's kind of making it seem like she's stressed and unhappy and could be a person who would kill herself.
Really? I didn't think of it that way. You might be right.
That's how I'd look at it.
So he's already starting to plan because he doesn't want her to leave him.
Right.
That's not okay with him.
It's not okay. For many reasons, it's not okay.
Right.
But it just struck me as that's what he was doing. He was setting things up.
Okay. That could be it. Yeah. Now, when Jen brought up divorce, Bart asked her to wait until after Christmas. So, For the first time in their marriage, he actually apologized to her if he hadn't been treating her well. So Jen fell for it, I guess you could say, and agreed to stay until after the holidays. I mean, she actually didn't know where she was going to go anyway. She didn't really want to go back to her parents. Her sister offered, but who wants to move your family in with your sister? That's kind of feel like you're putting them out. That's tough.
Well, yeah, it is. At the same time, you want to get out of this relationship.
Well, I think if you knew how bad it really was, if you knew in hindsight how it was going to end up, sure, you'd go anywhere.
Well, even not knowing how it was going to end up, I mean, it sounds like things were at such a low level that she needed to get out.
It's true.
And whether that means bunking with your folks or your sister, whatever it takes,
yeah,
get out of there.
Right. Well, Jen wanted Chris to meet her in Atlanta, so she's still thinking she's going to have a life with Chris. But he backed out at the last minute, saying his mother was in the hospital. So every time they're going to meet or something, there's a reason why he can't. But she did continue to rely on him for emotional support. You know, she thought she was in love with this person. Which, who are we to judge?
Right.
Right. So then on November 17th, Chris vanished from Jen's life. She emailed him several times but got no answers. When he finally answered, he seemed removed and distant. Before Thanksgiving, Jen wrote to Chris begging him to meet her in person. Then Jen learned why Chris wouldn't meet her. Chris admitted to Jen that he was actually a woman. There was no Chris. Her name was Anita. Now Jen was shocked. Anita was a single bisexual woman, and at first Jen was furious with her. She felt betrayed, which just makes sense.
Understandably.
And losing Chris was crushing to her because this was the one good thing she had in her life, you know, besides her children. And in retrospect, she realized how naive she'd been with this whole thing. So it seemed important to Bart that he be the one to end their relationship. So he asked Jen to stay, but he continued his affair with Dara. And then Bart had warned Jen that if she left him, she would not get custody of the boys. So on the way to Thanksgiving dinner at Jen's parents' house, Bart found printed emails between Jen and Chris in Jen's purse. So she went into the store to get a turkey baster and left her purse in the car with him and the boys.
So, of course,
He goes through it and he finds some emails she'd printed out because I think she deleted them from her computer but wanted to keep them printed without anyone seeing them.
Because she's pretty certain he's going through her computer.
Absolutely, right? At this point, yeah. So he finds them and not a good result from that.
No, he was pissed. So he took Jen's cell phone, put it in his pocket. Didn't say a word to her. When they got to her parents' house, he threw up. Then he began to drink wine on the back deck, ignoring everyone. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah, that must have been quite the day.
Before dessert was served, Bart announced that they were leaving. Once they were out front, he began yelling at Jen. Family inside could hear everything as he called Jen a slut in front of their two boys.
It's not nice.
No, didn't anyone go out anyway? Jen asked Bart not to talk about it in front of the boys. She shook her finger at him, and he erupted with rage, hauling off and slapping her in the face. Wow.
Yeah.
It's escalated. Jen was shocked. He'd never struck her before. So the ride home was pretty quiet, except for Dalton's crying.
Yeah, so Jen was driving, Bart's in the passenger seat, and the boys are in the back. I think Dylan was asleep.
Yeah.
And Dalton was crying because he was overhearing everything.
Yes, and Jen was so concerned about Bart being out of control, she was afraid he'd grab the wheel and crash the car. So they did get home without further mishap. Jen settled the boys in and called her sister. Then she called her dad, who told her to grab the boys and come back.
Now, smart.
There's some good advice.
Although, why didn't he just go over there with her instead of
follow them over? I don't know.
Yeah. Or call the police.
So, and he told her to take an alternate route so Bart couldn't follow her.
Sure. So Jen was gathering pajamas for the boys, and as she put the boys in the SUV, her neighbor, Kelly Como, came over, and Jen told her that Bart had hit her. And then Jen drove off with the boys and spent the night at her sister Heather's house. Now, Jen returned home the next day. She didn't seem afraid of Bart. She was just sad. And each night, Jen made dinner, and they ate together. Jen and Bart slept in separate bedrooms, though, and Dalton had become a really nervous child, following Jen around and being very protective and worried about her. Bart took the hard drive from his computer to an expert to extract all of Jen's emails, and Jen consulted an attorney recommended by her brother-in-law. The attorney advised Jen not to move out of the house, or Bart could take possession of it. So Jen was looking for a full-time job. She decided she would stay with Bart until the new year. She forgave Anita, confused about her feelings still, and decided that she would continue to communicate with Anita because, regardless, she was a good friend to her.
Yeah, so they made kind of peace together.
Yes, they did.
And continued to resume their communication.
Yes. Now Bart, he continued to search through Jen's things. She'd replaced the phone Bart took from her on Thanksgiving, and then he took the new phone. He also took the only credit card she had. He was angry and out of control. When Jen asked for her possessions back, Bart had run out of the house, just out of the shower, and only wearing a towel. Now Jen, yeah, he was furious, though. It was scary. Sounds funny, but this was scary. So Jen tried to stop him, and she called 911. She was afraid he was going to crash the car and end up killing somebody because he was in a rage. So she was talking to the 911 operator and standing behind Bart's Mustang when he began to back out of the driveway. So she thought he'd stop, but he didn't stop. She tried to jump out of the way, but he ran over her foot.
Jeez.
And Dalton and Dylan had come outside and they'd seen the whole thing. So Jen learned that Bart filed for divorce on November 29th. He wanted everything. The house, full custody of the kids, the boat, furniture. And when he returned home after running over Jen's foot, she and the boys were gone from the house. Now, fortunately, Jen had no broken bones, just some bleeding and bruises in the foot. But then she didn't press any charges.
Nope.
Which, looking back, why wouldn't you?
I know. Things seem to have gotten to a point where that'd be a good idea.
Yeah, I don't think she's realizing how serious it's getting.
No.
No.
So, poor little Dalton, the kid who is so upset by all this stuff.
Yeah, he's 6 or 7. Yeah. I think he's almost, yeah, he must be 7 at that point.
He told Jen's parents that Bart was going to kill his mom.
He did.
Holy cow. But Jen herself wasn't worried that he would hurt her. She didn't want to move in with her parents or sister because she didn't want the boys to have to change schools.
Yeah.
So Jen returned home. Bart started going out with friends each night after dinner, and Jen continued to do his laundry and take care of things. She found a parking lot ticket in one of his shirts. This was from a library in Birmingham, Alabama. And the date was November 29th. Jen couldn't figure out why he'd made a quick trip there. It would have taken 6 hours. And she mentioned this to a couple of friends. You know,
she did.
What the heck's going on?
Including Anita, I believe.
On Friday night, December 3rd, Jen tucked the boys into bed, spent time talking to Anita. Bart had gone out after dinner and hadn't returned when Dalton and Dylan went to bed. Now, it wasn't too long after Jen was found dead, because this was the night that she was killed.
Yes,
or she
was
died.
The night before, yeah.
Investigators learned that there had been a lot going on in her life. They found out she'd been communicating with someone over the internet, but no one knew the person's name.
Yeah, because when she did find out it was a woman, she didn't tell anyone. She was embarrassed.
Well, yeah.
So she didn't tell her sister or anyone because they were already critical of her having this relationship online.
Well, they thought she was kind of crazy about that anyway.
Yeah, so and then they were right.
They're right. So you're not going to admit that, oh, yeah, by the way.
Yeah, I was
stupid. Chris is really Anita.
Yeah, so she didn't admit that, which who can blame her?
I couldn't.
So, according to family and friends, it could have been Chris or Anita. It could have been a male or a female. This person could have been watching Jen, waiting for her husband to leave, and this person could have been responsible for her death. Now, the Corbin's neighbor, Steve Cuomo, had heard a truck come down the street and pull into the Corbin's driveway the night of the 3rd, early morning of December 4th, and then it left a short time later. Now, this had occurred around the time of Jen's death.
And he was pretty certain that it was the sound of Bart's truck.
Yes.
Not just a truck.
No.
But Bart's truck.
He was familiar with it.
Yeah.
Which I guess people can be.
Oh, sure.
I wouldn't know, but I guess you can be. You're used to that.
I can tell if I'm home alone. I can hear your car in the driveway, and I know it's you.
Really?
From the sound of the car.
Okay. Well, just a few days after, Jed and Corbin's mother, Narda, received a stunning call. The caller said that Bart Corbin had been involved in another volatile relationship 14 years ago with a fellow dental student named Dolly Hearn.
Well, well, well.
Bart had dated Dolly during her third year of dental school, and the relationship had become strained.
So who ratted him out, do we know?
It was one of Dolly's relatives.
Huh.
Because so they said...
They must have seen the death notice in the paper.
Sure.
And said, oh, Bart.
Right.
We know him.
They must have been shocked. And pretty upset, because if Dolly's case had been solved, Jen wouldn't have been killed.
Right.
So Dolly's roommate had discovered Dolly's body on June 6, 1990, just as Bart was about to graduate, and she died of a gunshot wound to the head, just as Jen had. But to the investigators in 1990, they settled that it was a suicide.
Right.
Right. So now it's 14 years later.
But Jen's death was not determined as suicide.
No.
Even though it was kind of made to look that way.
It was a possible suicide. They weren't sure. So Bart was notified of Jen's death by his brother, and he stayed with his brother, not going to the house or even asking about his children. And then 7-year-old Dalton was interviewed by the police, and when asked about whether or not his parents might divorce or separate, he said, mm-hmm. The detective asked the boy if he knew why he was at the police station, and Dalton said, 'cause my mom got killed this morning. The boy stayed with Jen's sister Heather while custody was to be determined. Now, Dalton was afraid of Bart and didn't want to speak on the phone with him even.
Yeah.
Because he was certain that his father had killed her. He lived in the house. He knew what was going on.
So these little kids know what's going on, or at least this one did.
This one does. Now, Bart had an alibi for the night Jen died. He'd left the house around 10 p.m. to meet two friends for a late dinner and drinks at a local pub. Then he said he went and got coffee and went to his brother's house. Now, Bart called a friend of his on December 5th, asking him to extract information from the family computer. But when the friend asked if everything was okay, now this is the day after she died, right?
Right.
Bart said, oh, everything's fine. Didn't even mention that Jen had died. So when this friend saw Jen's face on the news, he was shocked because Jen had been dead for 24 hours when Bart called to have him do this and said, oh, no, everything's fine.
He knows that something was going on.
Well, that's very strange. Now, Jen's mother found Anita, Chris' phone number, on her phone and called Anita. Now, she notified Anita of Jen's death, and she said Anita broke into sobs. She'd been trying to reach Jen online and through the online game with no success, and she'd been really worried. And she was heartbroken. She blamed herself, which justifiably so in some respects. Now, once Narda figured out who Anita was and how she'd lied to Jen and misled her, she did blame her for her part in Jen's problems. But Anita really seemed to have loved and cared about Jen, and she was really filled with guilt. Now, on December 10th, police contacted Anita, and Anita knew Jen very well. She knew about Jen's marital problems. She knew that Bart had run over her foot and that she planned to leave him. Anita said she'd been on the EverQuest game with Jen until 1:15 a.m., the morning of the 4th. Bart had left the house, according to Jen, around 9 p.m. Friday evening, and Anita and Jen had planned to meet after Christmas. Then decide if Anita should move to Georgia, maybe they could share a home and they could raise their kids together, because Anita was raising two of her sister's children, and Jen had two children. So they at least were going to maintain a friendship and maybe move in together.
Right.
And then I don't know if they were going to decide on having an actual intimate relationship that hadn't been determined.
No.
But they were still caring about each other.
But they still communicated and cared about each other, as you
said. And planned to meet in the near future, yeah.
Yeah. Stranger than fiction. Anita's last name was Hearn, which is the same as Dolly.
Yeah.
Isn't it? But there's no relation.
No, but I think when Bart saw some of the emails going back to a Hearn, he was probably worried that he was being figured out. That must have freaked him out.
Maybe. Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. Can you imagine? He knows he killed a Hearn, and then he looks up his wife's emails and sees that name.
Yeah.
He probably did think something was up with that.
So Jen had told Anita about Bart's strange trip to Alabama on November 29th, and they wondered together if he had gone there to meet with a lawyer.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe not.
I mean, why would he go there? She didn't know.
But we'll find out.
Yes. It's an important part of the case, really.
It blows the case out of the water.
Absolutely.
Enough. We don't want to tease people. So a grand jury met on December 15th. Bart's brothers and friends were called to testify, and none of them were particularly forthcoming. They had spent the evening of Friday, December 3rd, with Bart. One of Bart's friends, Kevin Little, admitted that Bart had been late to meet them at a Mexican restaurant that evening, and that he seemed agitated. Bart had had about 6 beers, and Kevin was a designated driver, and he drove them back to his place, where Bart had left his car. Now, once they're at Kevin's house, Bart insists on taking his car and leaving. Jen's approximate time of death was 2 a.m. Bobby Corbin testified that Bart got to his house about 2:30 in the morning. And Bobby said that Bart seemed pretty normal. They both slept until about 7 a.m., and then their mother called around 9 to tell them about Jen. So, he's kind of alibied up.
Kind of. It's shaky.
Yeah.
I mean,
it might not stand up under close scrutiny.
Right, exactly.
But it's good enough to begin with.
Right. So his little brother Bobby said they planned to go to Buford to see Jen's family and the boys, but Heather accused Bart of killing Jen, so they didn't feel comfortable going there. So that was his reason why they didn't go over to the house after Jen was found dead.
Well, part of me says that's true, or I think that could be a reason, but wouldn't you want to see your kids?
Yes, if you didn't kill her and you cared,
wouldn't that be the overriding thing?
I would think so.
So.
But I think it's clear to a lot of people here that he did it, and he knows that they know.
Yeah.
Sure. Now, Bart had a 2-hour lapse in his alibi, where no one had seen or heard from him. Brad had not seen Bart on Friday evening. He saw Bart on Saturday, after learning of Jen's death. But he said that he hadn't discussed Jen's death with him. Brad had asked Bart some questions, but Bart had told him his lawyer had advised him not to speak to anyone, even family, about Jen's death. So while detectives were working on finding out how Jen had died, the investigators in Dolly Hearn's case kept in touch with them. They discovered many similarities in the two deaths. Bart went back to full-time work after Jen's funeral, and he refused to talk to police or the DA. Now, Bart and his parents petitioned for custody of Dalton and Dylan, but the kids were kept with Jen's sister. Now, in retaliation, Bart canceled the boys' health insurance when he didn't get custody of them.
What a sweetheart.
It's just a real baby dick move.
Yep. Dick as an adjective, not as a noun.
Absolutely.
Okay. So Bart was trying to collect on $250,000 life insurance policy on Jen's death. And the interesting thing, this almost boggles the mind. He'd called the insurance agent on Sunday, December 5th, so this is the day after, leaving a message that Jen had been in a horrible accident. He was told that he wouldn't be able to collect until the investigation into her death was closed.
But how does he not think that they're going to find out that she died of a gunshot wound? A horrible accident?
Why
would you even try and lie about that? And to call the day after your wife dies, it's so transparent.
Isn't it? So then he also became aware the police were starting to look at Dolly's case again, and he said to a friend, "That bitch is still causing me trouble." Mr. Empathy.
And I hate to laugh, but that's just like something you'd hear in a movie.
Yeah.
That's so cold.
Dolly's parents had hired a private investigator after Dolly's death, convinced that she was murdered. Looking back over the PI's files in 2004, the police noticed many discrepancies. People who had known Bart and Dolly back in 1990 were interviewed again. Dolly's roommate remembered finding unpacked groceries in the apartment kitchen later in the day when Dolly died, as if she'd just returned from the store.
Oh, that would make you wonder about the suicide, wouldn't it?
It would, right?
Yeah, and also she had some ledgers or something sitting there that she was working on.
Mm-hmm. And it just sounds like the private investigator was lazy.
Private investigator was?
Yeah, because he said that it's a suicide also.
Right, so you think he could have looked into it more?
I don't think he investigated as much as he should have.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, the Hearns still had Dolly's .38 revolver in the ledgers she'd been working on that day. In 1990, at the time of Dolly's murder, Bart drove a silver Monte Carlo. Co-worker who had gone to pick up a key from Dolly that day saw a silver Monte Carlo parked next to Dolly's car. So possibly that was Bart who was there.
That places him at the scene, absolutely.
It could.
When the co-worker, a woman, waited inside Dolly's apartment for the key, she saw the bathroom door ajar, and she could see a man through the crack where the door hinges were. Now, he looked tall, with dark hair, and he was bare-chested. So this is very interesting.
Like he was hiding in the bathroom?
Yep, behind the bathroom door.
Mm-hmm.
Dolly didn't mention the man, but she seemed to take an extra long time getting the key. And the co-worker told investigators that Dolly seemed overly friendly and wanted her to stay and chat, which they weren't that good of friends. So she didn't know Dolly that well, but she thought it was strange that she wanted to chat more with her and keep her there.
That is strange.
Because at first the woman was just going to stand outside the door, but Dolly insisted that she come in and get the key.
So something's going on.
I think Dolly was afraid.
Yeah.
Now, it seemed odd because she must have known that the man was there. There's no way that Dolly didn't know that the man was in the bathroom with his shirt off.
Right.
And after learning of Dolly's death, she didn't believe it was a suicide because this had happened. And she thought, in retrospect, that Dolly may have been afraid and wanted her to stay there. So she felt really bad about that. But unfortunately, she hadn't seen the man's face, so she couldn't definitely say it was Bart. But we do have a car similar to his parked next to Dolly's.
And we have his general physical description.
Right, right. Now, according to Eric Rader, there was a night in the late winter or spring of 1990 when Bart confessed to him that he had almost killed Dolly. He said he'd waited in Dolly's parking lot with a gun, ready to shoot her. And then Bart had told another friend that he had planned the perfect murder. So these are scary things, which I don't know why nothing came of it in 1990.
Well, again, it didn't get investigated as well as it should have been.
Now, Eric Rader also told police that Bart knew where Dolly kept her gun. Bart had said to the police that he didn't even know she owned a gun. So, in mid-December 2004, after confirming from the evidence that Dolly's body had been moved after she died, and after confirming reports from Eric Rader, Bart was indicted for Dolly's premeditated murder. So he was indicted for Dolly first, after Jen's death.
Okay.
And it was only mid-December, so we're just talking a week or two after Jen's death.
Yeah.
Now, on December 21st, Bart was followed to a restaurant where he met with a man who he was overheard telling that they needed to speak in a secluded booth. And on the 22nd, Bart was arrested as Dara drove him home from the dental clinic after work. Now, her car was pulled over and surrounded by four police cars. Bart was surprised to hear that he was arrested on Dolly's death, not Jen's, and he was transported to Augusta. Now, in Augusta, Bart was photographed being led into jail, and Dara was interviewed. Now, Dara admitted that Bart did look guilty when she was presented with the evidence, but she'd known Bart a long time, and she just couldn't imagine that he would have killed anyone, especially Jen, who she thought was just a super sweet person.
Yeah. Well, Bart's trying to sway the opinion. He was creating false journal entries, expressing in them his love for Jen and patience with her moods. He wrote how he had cooked supper, played games, and gotten the boys ready for bed, while Jen went out for drinks and returned home late.
So this is an interesting piece of fiction, because that really shows some lengthy premeditation.
Doesn't it?
Now, I guess you could say it was just for the divorce. He was trying to make himself look good, too. It wouldn't necessarily have to do with murder.
Not necessarily.
But it could work either way.
It can work for both ways, right?
That's right.
So Bart had also called a friend of Jen's named Juliet on December 3rd, the day before. Sounded hoarse, as if he'd been crying. He asked her, "Do you think there's any hope?" Juliet tried to make him feel better, saying that Jen had agreed to go to marriage counseling. But Bart seemed obsessed with Jen's internet relationship. He believed that she was communicating with a man, didn't know that Chris was Anita, and that he was pretty jealous. So he's in jail in Augusta for the Dolly Hearn murder, and police are working on Jen's case. A forensic technologist got a search warrant for the Corbin's computer. He got a call from a computer technician who had worked on Bart's hard drive and still had a copy. So Bart fucked himself on that one, didn't he?
He certainly did.
Police also tracked Bart's cell phone records, and they charted out tower locations. There was no way that Bart could have been at his brother's house as early as he claimed to have been.
Right. Now, his phone records put him near the house in Buford, and Bart was unaware, apparently, that his cell phone left a trail. On January 5th of 2005, Bart was officially charged with one count of malice murder, one count of felony murder, and possession of a firearm during the commission of a murder. For his own protection, Bart was kept separate from other prisoners. Apparently, prisoners who kill women are often targeted by criminals who don't believe in hurting women or children, and bad things happen to them in prison.
Okay. Just like pedophiles and stuff. I mean, there's...
Yeah, I mean, criminals...
Certain classes in the prison.
Criminals have a code.
Yeah.
Right? It turned out that the man Bart had met on December 21st when police followed him to the restaurant was Richard Wilson from Troy, Alabama. So this was who Bart had gone to see on November the 29th.
There's the Birmingham trip.
Now, DA Danny Porter needed hard proof to tie Bart to the gun that had killed Jen. So he dispatched investigators to Alabama to talk to Richard Wilson. And initially, Richard claimed that he knew nothing about the gun.
Yep.
So investigators also found that the bullet wound and trail of blood on Jen's face weren't consistent with her doing it to herself. Her arms weren't long enough to shoot herself in the direction that she'd been shot. Also, there were no fingerprints on the gun and no gunpowder residue on her hands.
So, suicide is out.
Yeah, and they had done gunshot residue on Bart's hands, but he'd had plenty of time to wash them.
Yeah.
He'd been at his brother's.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the defense attorneys for Bart were hopeful that they could get acquittals on both murder charges. They said that Jen feared losing her boys in a custody battle and was really depressed. Also, she'd learned that her man on the internet was a woman, and that could have been what threw her over the edge.
Sure.
Now, as jury selection began, the chief investigator handed the DA a note saying, "You have to come out of the courtroom right now," with an underline under now.
Several underlines.
Yes. So Richard Wilson had admitted to giving Bart the gun in exchange for a lawnmower, and the DA met with Bart's attorneys. So if convicted, Bart faced the possibility of the death penalty for the murders.
Right.
And the attorneys agreed that the case against Bart was now a slam dunk. So Bart was offered a plea to murder and life in prison. The DA conferred with the Hearn and Barber families, and they would wrap up both cases if Bart would just admit to both murders. So it was on Friday, September 15th, that Bart faced the judge and the families of Jen Corbin and Dolly Hearn. Jen's father and Dolly's brother spoke to Bart in the courtroom, but Bart sat very stoically. Jen's father had told him he was doing the right thing by admitting to this, but that God may forgive him, but he never would. And Dolly's brother said something to the effect of that he didn't deserve any kind of life on the outside. Now, Dalton and Dylan are being raised by Jen's sister Heather and her husband with their two kids. And another interesting aside, which I hadn't mentioned, was that a friend of Jen's, Mary Denise Lance, went missing on March 12, 2004, so just a few months before Jen was killed. Now, we don't think that Bart had anything to do with that, but it's just a weird coincidence. She was living with a fiancé, Christopher Pratt, who's a person of interest. She hasn't been found, so this is like 12, 13 years ago.
Yeah.
13 years ago, yeah. And what she was quite a good friend of Jen's because her husband and her went with Jen and Bart on their trip to Italy before they were married.
Ah, the long ago trip when everything was peachy.
Right. And I guess things were peachy then with Mary and her husband too, but they'd gotten divorced.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary was a nurse living with a fiance. And her fiancé said that she was drunk and she'd walked off in the night, never to be seen again. So that might be a case we do in the future, I guess, is what I wanted to bring it up for.
Yeah.
It's an interesting case, and a lot of people like the cases that aren't solved. It gives you something to think about and try and figure out. So,
well, I think we'd also want to see if we could find out whatever came of the case of the 50-year-old woman that Bart was having an affair with.
Yeah, sure. We could look into that, too. It's interesting because this just started out as a case about a dentist killing his wife, and
right.
It branched out in so many directions.
And then we found out that he killed another woman as a dental student, or might have, and he's got other people that
he was convicted of that one, so we can say he did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And we've got other women that have had strange disappearances.
That's right.
That are connected with him.
That's true. I mean, he could be connected with Mary Denise Lands. We don't know.
Very interesting.
So it's definitely something to look into.
Yeah.
So I've added that to our list of future cases.
Okay.
Okay.
There's no end to these.
No, not really.
All right.
Okay, so we're going to go to our feedback section. You ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Let's just have a little musical interlude.
Okay.
Okay, welcome to feedback. So our first feedback is a voicemail, and this is a voicemail from Tracy regarding Crystal Ballard Rogers. So our voicemail app only gives about 1.5 minutes each call, and Tracy, the trooper that she is, made 4 calls to leave us this message, so I've edited it together as one message. So let's listen to that, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Hello. My name is Tracy, and I've never just left a voicemail for a podcast before, so it has taken me a while. I first heard of you when you did an episode on Crystal Ballard Rogers, and I was upset because of the inconsistencies. I actually thought you interviewed people. I didn't realize that you researched and then did the episode, and so I listened to other episodes, and I really do enjoy them. A lot. I love the beer reviews also. So I just want to say thank you. Okay, question number one. Did you realize Crystal was married? That's where the Rogers came from. And yet, no one ever mentions that she was married. I never liked her husband. And I can't believe she even married him. But that's just another story. A year before Crystal died, a teacher and her daughter were viciously murdered Easter weekend in their home in Nelson County. A year before that, a police officer was ambushed and slaughtered. His name was Jason Ellis. You probably can Google him, and there'll be quite a bit written about him. Nelson County has had so many homicides. It's unsolved homicides, I should say, and it's scary. And the ironic thing is, Bardstown, number one little town in the United States. Jill, another question was, did you happen to watch the interrogations of her boyfriend and his brother? His brother is was a police officer, and anybody that knows anything can tell he was lying on the taped interrogation. That just really upset me. Crystal was a very nice person. There was no reason her boyfriend would have had to kill her. She was very unconfrontational. She would do anything to avoid confrontation. And I wrote you about her father's murder. Tommy Ballard was shot once in the chest and died immediately. He was shot once in the chest, died instantly, and Crystal's son was with him. It was a horrible tragedy. And Everyone knows it was no accident. People believe he was getting too close to the truth. Since his death, a lot of businesses have pulled up their Justice for Crystal signs. And sometimes I worry that nobody will ever know what happened to her. Somebody could get away with murder or murders. And I would love for you to revisit this case. I know you have a regular full-time job also. I just sometimes get worried. The only reason this case has got so much publicity is because of her family. If she was just a single mom with 5 kids, nobody would have cared. I just hope you can be her voice.
Okay, well, thank you to Tracy for calling in. It's quite a message, a lot to it.
Yeah, but yeah. It's nice to hear people by voice.
Absolutely.
I think that's really cool.
It is. I like it.
I'm sorry we only get a minute and a half, but keep persevering and we'll get the whole thing
eventually.
Yeah, I mean,
if you're willing to put the effort in and keep calling, that's wonderful. So in regard to the interviews with Crystal's boyfriend and brother, we did watch those, and they did seem evasive.
That's putting it mildly.
There was also the time when Brooke's brother called him while he was in the interrogation, and that was very fishy.
Wasn't it?
And then Nick, the brother, he did actually lose his job with the police.
Yes.
Now, her boyfriend at the time she disappeared, Brooke's Hook, was it Hook?
Hook or Hoke?
Hoke, I think it is, yeah. His brother Nick and their grandmother, Anna Whitesides, had their homes and farmland searched last fall. Now, police do believe that the grandmother's car was used in Crystal's disappearance, which we also discussed.
Right.
Right, because the car was, they borrowed it, and then it's just gone.
And then it got sold or something.
We don't know where it is, yeah. So Sherry Ballard, Crystal's mother, and the widow of Crystal's father, Tommy Ballard, was interviewed on February 17th, so just about a month ago. And this was by WHAS 11, Bardstown, Kentucky local station. And she said that she believes her husband's death is related to her daughter's disappearance. So we don't know who shot Tommy Ballard, and we don't know why.
Right.
So we have Crystal missing and Tommy dead, and really no answers.
Exactly.
Now, Tommy Ballard's death is still labeled a death investigation, but many believe it's a murder. Now, if you have any more information on this case, please call the Kentucky State Police at 270-766-5078, and you can remain anonymous if you call that number. And Tracy, we are going to keep revisiting this case. It's something I check on probably once a month to see if there's anything new. And if anyone else sees something, this February interview was the most recent thing I could find. But if anyone else finds anything, please send it on to us or call and tell us about it.
We'd love to hear.
Yeah, because obviously something funny is going on. I don't know about these other murders of the mother and daughter and the policeman, if they're related or just it's just strange. But definitely with Crystal and Tommy, something's strange about that.
There sure is. I mean, we've talked about that, how a town as relatively small as Bardstown has had so many murders in that time interval.
And as Tracy pointed out, unsolved murders.
Right.
I mean, I think that it's sadly pretty safe to assume that Crystal is dead. She's not someone who would have left her children.
No, I don't think so.
That's very suspicious circumstances. And I don't know what's up with Crystal's husband. I guess they were separated because she was with Brooks.
And she'd had a child with Brooks.
Yes. So I'm not sure what the deal is with the husband. Sounds like Tracy, who actually knew Crystal, she's written to us before. It sounds like she wasn't too crazy about Crystal's husband.
Yeah.
I don't know how she feels about Brooks, though.
Well, she said that, didn't she say that she didn't think Brooks could have done it?
Yeah, but then she was talking about the interviews and how they were kind of shady in the interviews, yeah. So not sure.
Well, Tracy, let's hear some more from you.
Okay. And anyone else who knows.
Okay.
Okay, what have you got?
I have one from Lady London on YouTube regarding the Munchausen by proxy case.
Lacey Spears.
And Lady London says, sounds as if the hospital and the various medical providers were negligent in not protecting the baby sooner.
Okay, now I kind of agree with that, but you don't? You don't seem to agree with it as much as I do, I think?
I think that's the way I'd put it.
Yeah.
I think I agree somewhat with it. I think it's always difficult to suspect that a parent or a caretaker is harming a child.
Sure.
And you don't want to believe that.
Well, and it's a super hard thing to prove.
It can be. And I know the mandate is that if we suspect it, we should report it.
Yes.
But I think there's still kind of a reluctance, short of real actual proof, to do it.
Well, and I think part of how she got away with it so long was moving. She moved to another area, so the case was dropped.
If you look at histories like that, that's one way of avoiding prosecution, that you have different providers that don't know what's going on with other providers.
So maybe in the near future we need to have, I don't want it to be too much Big Brother, but maybe medical records need to be tracked, just like driver's licenses and every other thing.
Absolutely.
To keep track of where health care is being used.
And there were people that had reported them.
There were.
And for a variety of reasons, nothing happened.
Right. And I think the last time was when she moved to New York. It was really closing in on her.
Yeah.
And I think it was the Department of Human Services was investigating, but then she left, and like I said, it didn't follow her. So that's a hole in the system, I guess.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
So I think that this is a statement that sounds reasonable.
Okay.
That it should have been more thoroughly investigated. But again, we're also looking at it in hindsight. And that's always a good way to view things.
Yeah, but the ear infections of the kids she was babysitting beforehand and all that, was strange.
There's a zillion red flags.
Yeah. Okay. So I have some feedback on Michael Peterson. So last week, we had mentioned that he had a new court date this coming May. But Laura in California updated us that in February this year, Peterson pled guilty for voluntary manslaughter of Kathleen Peterson. So he was sentenced to a maximum of 86 months in prison with credit for his time served. Now, because he already served more than 86 months, he didn't get any additional prison time. His plea was an Alford plea, so he didn't admit guilt, but he acknowledged that the state had sufficient evidence to convict him. So, the owl theory. Let's address that one more time, if you can stand it.
Well, I've really come to like the owl theory.
Okay.
I think there's enough evidence to support the owl theory.
Okay, so I have a few more things on that then.
Okay. But if we really are believing it, why did he plead out?
Well, I mean, there is the fact that he may have been convicted, and he's an old guy.
That's true.
So the owl theory. I mentioned that the podcast Criminal had done a podcast on the owl theory, and this aired back in January of 2014. And it was titled Animal Instincts. So I just wanted to say that if anyone wants to listen to it, you can look that up. It's only 20, 30 minutes, but it's interesting. Now, the owl theory was raised by Durham attorney T. Lawrence Pollard, a neighbor of Peterson's who was not involved in the case. He went to police suggesting that an owl may have attacked Kathleen after reading the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation's evidence list and finding a feather on the list. Now, the Bureau Crime Lab report listed a microscopic owl feather and a wooden sliver from a tree limb entangled in a clump of hair that had been pulled out by the roots and was clutched in Kathleen's left hand. That's very interesting to me.
It sure is.
If she's being attacked,
so she's why attacked
would she...
by an owl?
Yeah.
And she's trying to get the owl off of her?
Then that would happen.
Right.
Now, also, further examination of the hair found two more microscopic owl feathers. So advocates of the owl theory say that other evidence supports an owl attack. The scalp wounds were trilobed and paired, so that's consistent with marks left by talons.
Yes.
The feathers were consistent with owl feet feathers, the little tiny ones. Now also cedar needles were found on her hands and body, indicating that she may have fallen over outside before entering the house. Now, I'm not sure if that's something that may have been on the floor. I'm not sure how clean the house was, but that's interesting. Also, something I didn't remember was that there were two drops of Kathleen's blood found outside of the house on the front walkway, along with a finger smear on the front door consistent with her pushing the door shut. Now, also, owl attacks are more common than you might think. Sounds kind of like an out there theory, but they happen. One local victim said that the impact of being attacked by an owl was similar to being hit in the head with a baseball bat.
Yeah, those aren't small birds.
Some force.
Yeah.
They come flying in with some force with those talons.
Yep.
Pretty severe.
It could be.
Now, Kate Davis, executive director of a Western Montana wildlife rehab project, wrote, "The lacerations on Mrs. Peterson's scalp look very much like those by a raptor's talons, especially if she had forcibly torn the bird from the back of her head. Now, that would explain the feathers found in her hand and the many hairs that she'd pulled out by the root ball. The size and configuration of the laceration could indicate the feet of a barred owl." So I don't know why the owl theory didn't make it to court.
Right.
That's the one thing I don't understand. If it had been me, I think I would have said, forget the Alford plea. Let's go to court and argue the owl theory. But it's his life.
But like you said, it's his life, and he's getting more old.
Right, and he doesn't have to go to prison.
Right.
And his career's over anyway.
Yeah, so.
Now, interestingly, we have Fred on Twitter who wrote to us, and this is regarding our discussion of Michael Peterson. So Fred wrote, "Forensic, behavioral, and circumstantial evidence all point to Michael Peterson as the murderer." And then Fred also wrote that the owl theory is gaining traction, but that it's wrong. So he disagrees with us on this. He thinks that Michael Peterson is definitely guilty. So one more thing from Fred was that I had spoken on our podcast about how Michael Peterson turned to his family reassuredly after he was found guilty. Mm-hmm. You know, he turned to him and said, it's okay.
Right.
And I thought it seemed really selfless and caring of him that he was a good father. And I commented on that.
But we have disagreement.
And I guess I asked in the podcast, am I just a sucker? And Fred says yes.
Okay.
Fred said, Michael Peterson is a manipulative murderer. And I have to say that's entirely possible. We don't know. And I could have been won over by his children. His children were impressive people.
They were.
I loved his kids.
And they all, without question, support him.
Yeah, and he had this like Zen-like attitude about, if I go to prison, it's not the worst thing. You know, you exist within yourself, not your surroundings. And, you know, I admit it, I fell for it.
Yeah.
But I still don't feel like he's guilty, so.
I don't either.
Okay.
I think there's a reasonable explanation.
I think you can make reasonable arguments on either side, though.
Yeah.
So we'll agree to disagree with Fred, and maybe someday we'll find out that the owl actually did it, and Fred can apologize to us on Twitter.
Right.
Or not. Right.
I mean, he just pled out, so.
So hopefully it's a closed case now.
It's Fred's. Fred's got it for now.
Yeah, I wonder what they were going to say the weapon was, because the blowpoke was found all dusty and covered in bugs in the basement.
Yeah, so they can't use that.
All right, I'll let it lie. This is a case that just never leaves my head.
Well, it was one of our early ones. We got hooked on it.
Just put so much thought into that
fascinating
case.
Fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got one more?
One more feedback.
Okay, this is from Nicole, and it's regarding Casey Anthony's statement.
Okay.
Jill and Dick, I am a dedicated listener and look forward to each episode. Considering the horrific crimes covered by your podcast, you both have managed to find a perfect balance of a relaxing listen and always a few laughs, all while discussing tragic events. My husband tells me I talk about the two of you as if we are friends and hang out.
That's how I talk about Carol and Daryl from The Walking Dead.
That's right. And she says, I tell him that we are friends and meet up every Tuesday at the Quiet End.
That's right. We are.
We have lots of friends that we meet at the Quiet End.
Yeah. Cool people.
Yeah. Nicole's one of them.
That's right.
So she goes on further. I just wanted to comment on the asshole of the week / year / life, Casey Anthony.
Yeah.
She's got it forever. I read the interview she gave in the AP and agree with your disgust and disdain for her inappropriate comments. But I was even more bothered by what she didn't say from her bullshit stance of innocence. Why didn't she make a statement that her daughter's killer still needs to be identified and held accountable for little Kaylee's demise? Casey Anthony is a grade-A narcissistic asshole who probably thinks her interview is believable. In parentheses, maybe if you live in Florida. She finishes, thanks again for the Tuesday nights at the Quiet End. By the way, thanks for sharing such a great story about the name Tie Grabber. Love it. Sincerely, Nicole.
Okay, thanks, Nicole.
Yeah, I think we are all in the same ballpark with this one.
Yeah, now this whole thing about her not saying we need to find her killer, but doesn't Casey supposedly think her dad did it? Wasn't that her defense? So maybe she wouldn't say that because she thinks George did it.
That's true. but she didn't say anything about...
about George not paying for it.
Right.
Right, nobody's
paying
for it.
There's nothing there other than, I just don't know what happened.
Right. Now, interestingly enough, we saw that, is it the ID Network that's going to have a Casey Anthony 3-night special coming up?
Yeah, we're going to watch that.
So we'll see if there's anything new in that from George. I've heard that she's not in contact with her family.
No.
No.
They're estranged.
Yeah, so be interesting if it's just a rehashing or if some new stuff comes up.
Yeah, I'm looking forward
to
it.
But you know we'll be watching it. We can't miss it.
Nope.
No. As long as it doesn't benefit her in any way, I'm okay with watching it. If she was to come out with anything, I would boycott it, absolutely.
Me too.
Okay. All right, well, thanks everybody for the feedback. We've been getting more feedback, which I love. If you would be bold enough to leave a voicemail, that's great. If you'd rather send an email, that's great too. You can even pick on us on Twitter. Any way you do it, we're going to share our feedback.
Right. And keep the feedback coming. We love hearing from people.
That's right. And we have our members-only content coming out now. We have one episode in March, and the one in April will be coming up next week. So if you would like to be able to listen to this premium content, please join Team TieGrabber at www.tiegrabber.com. We also have some merchandise you can buy on our website. If you go to tiegrabber.com and shop the brewery, we've got t-shirts, we've got bottle openers, coasters, stickers, and of course the almighty snifter.
Don't forget the snifter.
Yeah, my sister bought 4 for her daughter's wedding, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
She's going to give them as a wedding gift.
Well,
so your, that was pretty cool.
That's your sister.
Yeah, but we don't have the option of registering on our website. Not yet.
No.
No. And also follow us at TieGrabber Pods on Twitter and on Instagram, TieGrabber Podcasts. Also on Facebook. If you're old school, go to tiegrabber.com/Facebook and you can communicate with us there.
We're all over the place.
That's right. So thanks again, and we'll see you next time at the Quiet End.
We'll save the seats for you.